You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. I am Martin Acuña, and you're listening to Backstage Talk.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Backstage Talk. Today's guest is the incredible Ed Bell. He is a songwriter, author, and music educator with Christian Duhamel. He wrote the Kleban Award-winning musical My 80-Year-Old Boyfriend for Broadway actress Charissa Bertels. The show has been run at the Merrimack Repertoire Theater, the Arizona Theater Company, and the Human Race Theater Company in Dayton, Ohio. Ed is also the author of 7 popular books on songwriting, including the best-selling book, The Art of Songwriting. He was previously an artist in residence at Pearl Animation Studios in Shanghai, China, and he's worked on projects across the world at theaters, including London's Soho Theater and Crazy Cox, New York's Signature Theater and Duplex Cabaret Bar, Leeds Playhouse, and at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Ed, I am really, really happy to have you here. Welcome to Backstage Talk.
Hi, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Ed, what did I miss from your bio? Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, you know, like most artists, I do tons of different things, but basically I'm mostly a writer, a musician in different ways. So I do a fair amount of theatre work, particularly composition, lyric writing, writing shows. I also do a lot of education work. I have an online business called The Song Foundry, where I teach people songwriting either one-to-one or through content and blogs and the books that I have. And yeah, I think that's the kind of the main things that I do. So it's a nice mix of some writing, but also kind of related writing work.
That is incredible. And yes, as many of us artists, we need to be like multi-hyphenates.
Exactly.
So it's incredible that you have your education business, but you also write and write not only lyrics, but music.
Exactly.
And you have your book. So that's incredible. So what would be a random fun fact about you?
Well, I had a little think about this and... I'm going to tell, there's a couple of different things I could say, but I'm going to tell you my super cool, super New York theatrical story. There was one time, so you might be able to tell, I have a slightly mixed accent, I have a slightly weird accent, people often can't tell where I'm from. I was born in the UK, I'm in the UK right now, but I did live in New York full time for 3 years, a few years ago. And during the time I was there, a friend from London at that time was working on a few different TV projects, a TV producer. And basically he managed to get, at that time he was working with Ian McKellen on this project, and managed to get me and a couple of other friends invited to this super cool party on this very New York kind of party on the Upper East Side in New York. And I think I was partly invited because there was a piano there, but it was a super special piano. It was the piano that Oscar Hammerstein owned. So obviously that passed down, you know, through family and generations. Yeah. So the piano was there. And my friend was like, well, nobody really plays it apparently. So we'd love you to come and maybe you can just sit in the corner and, you know, and do some of that. So I did. But as I said, so Ian McKellen was at this party. It was super fun. And there was a moment he was just like, you know, he gave a little speech and he just wanted to to sing. He decided he wanted to sing I Am What I Am from Lakaja Fall. I didn't know it. I had to pull it up on my phone for the chords. But so basically, Ian McKellen led the whole room in song while I got to play Oscar Hammerstein's piano in the corner. So it's definitely one of my coolest stories. So
that is amazing. I mean, yeah.
It's a bit random. It's like, it's one of those, you know, those New York stories that is so super random. I did not see that coming. I did not think that was going to be on my life, my life card, but that's what happened. So that was super fun.
Yeah. And that's just amazing to play the same piano.
That was the thing. So yeah, I wish I'd got a picture. I didn't get a picture, unfortunately, but it was one of those, one of those New York moments.
I love it. So let's double click on musical theater and your craft as an artist. So when did you have that magic moment in which you said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Right. Yeah, 100%. That's a really good question. So I'd always kind of, you know, even as a kid, I think like a lot of us, I'd been to shows with family, and that was a thing I enjoyed. And I took piano lessons, you know, from when I was like 7 years old, and I'd always done bits. You know, I used to write songs when I was like 10 years old and things like that. Obviously, you know, never got performed, but were just fun things for me to do. But the big moment I had when I sort of decided that I wanted to make musical theatre my specialism, I was living in London at the time. I was actually doing a master's degree, so I was super lucky to be able to do that in like contemporary or classical composition, because that's really kind of what's available in the UK if you want to study music writing. It's kind of in that world. And so I was doing that, and there was one moment I remember going home to speak to my parents, and I was like, you know, I'm enjoying the course. It's really interesting. I'm learning a lot. But I don't know. I just feel like I want to do theatre more. That just seems more interesting to me. And it sounds really crazy now, but like my parents were just like, well, why don't you do that? Like, what's the thing? Because I think I was in this kind of parallel world, you know, that was interesting and fulfilling me in different ways, but wasn't kind of my main thing. So that was the moment I was like, oh, yeah, no, I can do this. And this, you know, theatre writing can be a thing to specialize in. So that was that, really. I started working on more projects specifically in that world. And yeah, that's kind of how we got here. So, you know, this is like 12, 13 years ago now, but that's it, basically.
That's incredible. And since then, you've done a lot. Like, you've built your business, you've written a lot of books, you've written shows. So that is incredible.
Thank you.
And in all this, like, sphere of theater, why musical theater, right? Because you can also do music for like straight plays or other types of theater, dance pieces, but why specifically musical theater?
Right, yeah, that's a really good question. And it really has been a thing that I absolutely focused on. Like, I don't, you know, I would never say never, but it's never interested me as much to write, you know, like background music, incidental music. I have friends that are very good at that. I have friends who do a lot of like film music or TV, and that has never really appealed to me in the same way. I mean, I think that there's a ton of things with theater. I think one is that it's live. It's just like, it's a one-off, you know, even these kind of like Broadway Western shows that have run for 30 years or whatever, you know, it's like, it's a one-off. It's a happening there in front of you. It's different every night, depending on the audience and how it goes and stuff like that. So that's definitely part of it. But I also think part of it is when you bring songs into a story in a really kind of integrated and meaningful way, that it's not, the music is just not an extra thing. It's a like really important part of what goes on. And, you know, that's the whole thing with a great musical. You have the music and the story and these songs and all the visual elements, costumes and lighting and whatever, that it's just, for me, it's just a much kind of like deeper emotional experience. You know, it's just, and I think that's the thing when people, you know, you go to a Broadway West End, or it doesn't even have to be a show, you know, in a theater that's that big, when it's a good show, you come out and you're just like, yeah, I really felt something. I saw things that were exciting. I heard these, you know, these amazing songs, this amazing live music. And it's just the way you can kind of like, there's kind of no art form like it, right? There's no art form with so many different things that you kind of push together to make one thing. And when it's good, it's really good. So I think that was the thing. It took me a while to figure that out, but I think that was the thing underneath that was kind of pushing me.
I love it.
Into this.
That is incredible. So what's your writing process like for a show? Because you write lyrics, you also write music. Where do you start?
Yeah.
I want to pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's another really good question. And I think the first thing to say is I talk about this a lot in my songwriting education work as well. And I don't just work with musical theatre writers, actually. Most of them, they aren't. But it's the same whether you're doing it, whether you're talking about it. There really is no like one size fits all process. It really depends on the project. It depends on who you're working with. And like you say, sometimes I'll write just the music. Sometimes it'll be music and lyrics. Very occasionally it's just the lyrics. That doesn't happen that often. But what I will say with musical theater is usually the first thing is to figure out the story, is to figure out the plan, is to figure out like kind of what the big picture of what you're trying to create or achieve is going to be. Because I know we might talk a bit more about it later, but when we were working on My Intro Boyfriend, which is this one woman, one actress musical, and so it's a full-length musical, it's about 100 minutes long, so like a full-length with an intermission. No, that's a lie, it doesn't have an intermission. How did I not know that? But one of the big things about writing that show is we spent a long time being like, what is the story? Or like, how do we want to use music to like tell this story? Like, what's the whole point of having this stuff here? And lots of conversations about what we wanted the kind of show to be. So I think, you know, it's that joke like in musical theater, which comes first, the music or the lyrics? And you're like, no, it's the book. I think there's a lot of truth in that, that very often you want to be like, what are we writing about? What's the, you know, especially when you have multiple collaborators in the room, like, you know, I can't write one version of a show and the people I'm collaborating with can't write a different version of the show, because then you end up obviously with a total mess. So yeah, usually there's a lot of conversations about kind of what's going on, you know, what's the plan. And then I think from there, I think I heard Stephen Schwartz say this about, was it writing Wicked or something like that? You kind of often just start with like the path of least resistance. Like, what is the song? I know a few times with My HO boyfriend, with my co-writer Christian DeMel, often he'd be like, oh yeah, I have an idea for the like lyric of this song. And so he'd go off and do that, and I'd be like, well, great, bring that back. And then he might be like, don't really know about that song, so what's that, how do you feel? I might be like, oh no, I have an idea, let's roll with that. So you really just like, you know, obviously it takes a long time to write any show, you know, even a relatively short show, there's obviously a lot of stuff to throw in there. So often, yeah, once you've kind of got a plan, it's like, what feels like an easiest first start? And it's usually not the opening number. Opening numbers are often written last. That's the thing people, you know, aren't always aware of. Sometimes, you know, it's the big ballad song, or it's just another moment that feels like, oh, that feels like a good jumping off point. And then you just do that, and then you see if it works. And if it works, great, it stays. And if it doesn't, which it usually doesn't, then you rewrite it, you change it, you kind of mix it up. And if you do that for long enough over and over again, eventually you have a show, you know, that's more or less ready to share with the world, you know?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's dive a little bit deeper on this award-winning musical of My 80-Year-Old Boyfriend. How was that process like, working with Christian and writing, rewriting, doing trials, doing workshops?
Right. Exactly. So this show is interesting in some ways that it was actually conceived. So we wrote the show for this actress, Carissa Bertel. She's a Broadway actress based in New York. And she kind of originated the idea for the show. Carissa's an amazing actress. She also does work in production, but she's kind of a new musical theater specialist. Like, she wears lots of different hats, but the kind of common theme is new musicals. And she was thinking about projects that she wanted to work on. And so in real life, she had an 8-year-old friend. So obviously, you know, so she kind of jokes about it being an 8-year-old boyfriend. She, in real life, she's married. But she basically had this real life 8-year-old man when she was a 30-something actress, who was this kind of like surprising, again, like only in New York, one of those stories, a very different friend that she kind of contrasted with, and they just managed to, they learned a lot from each other, and it was just a really interesting and unique friendship. And she just had this moment of like, this is what I want to work on. This is a story, and you know, there's tons of different parts of the show, but she was like, this is a story that needs to be told. This is a story that needs to exist in the world. So how am I going to make this happen? And so Christian, my co-writer on the show, is a really good friend of Carissa, one of Carissa's best friends. And so she brought him on, and they started talking about stories and stuff like that. And Christian was like, okay, this is great, but I think we should work with, you know, with a separate composer and potentially co-lyricist, which is eventually what I became. And Christian, I had met through a program in New York called the BMI Lehman Engel Musical Theatre Workshop, which you might be familiar about. Some of you guys listening might be familiar about. I just moved to New York to do that program. We'd met through that. Christian and I sat down and had a chat about the show, and it felt like a good fit. And so that was that. That was the kind of very beginning of it. But from there, if I remember rightly, there was like a New Works Festival in New York. There's tons of, you know, London, New York have all these kind of places where you can just try ideas out. Mm-hmm. And we applied for that, not sure we would get it. And we did. And I think we had like 3 or 4 weeks to like come up with 40 minutes of material. So we really did that thing of like fail fast, you know, throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And we came up with, it was about 40, 45 minutes of material, maybe like 5 or 6 songs, like full songs and other bits and pieces of other stuff. And we put up this very rough and ready version of the show. There was maybe 20, 30, 40 people in the audience. I don't remember exactly. Tons of friends, you know, and people like that. And once it was done, people were like, yeah, this feels like a thing. This feels like, you know, this feels like a thing that is worth, you know, spending, you know, a lot of you guys listening probably, you know, will know it takes a long time to write a musical. Like the average, often, you know, 6, 7, 8 years is a not super long time. You know, to write a musical in less than like 2 or 3 years is very fast. So, you know, so it's obviously like, did we want to keep going with this and see where it went? And we did. And the people, you know, the people that were there responded to it in a way. We were like, oh, yeah, I think there's something in there. So that was that. And then basically over a period of kind of the next, I think, 2 years, we did a similar thing a couple of times, obviously with new songs, more material, things like that. And eventually got to a stage. We did a full presentation, invited kind of really casually, actually, a couple of producers. We knew it wasn't even like an official showing or an official tryout or anything like that. And from that, we managed to engage a commercial producer, and that's kind of how everything went on from there. And we got the show in front of people and in front of theaters and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was just really a lot of, again, trying stuff out. What's really interesting is from the very first reading we did, this 40-minute version that was very rough, is I think there was like 2 songs that pretty much sailed through all of the developments and didn't change at all. So a few maybe tiny changes to a lyric, or like, you know, like an extra key change and, you know, something like that. But on the whole, yeah, there was these kind of 2 songs in particular, the closing number, and there's like a big ballad number called The Love Left Behind, which for whatever reason, they just seemed to kind of sail through while everything around them changed. And we have about at least 6 full songs we wrote out that were cut at some point, you know, whatever, but tons of small changes to just kind of like send the story in a slightly different direction. Or there was a whole, oh my God, I remember there was a whole song called... There's a really beautiful moment in the show where Carissa is this, you know, this younger actress buys Milton, the older man, like a cordless phone because he keeps tripping. He's got a wired phone and he keeps tripping up over it in the apartment. And now that's like 3 lines of dialogue and it works great. And he's like enchanted by this phone. But originally we had this whole like 4-minute song called Crazy Space Age Magic. And it was just about like all the things in the world right now that like someone in their 80s might like know exists, but not be familiar with them. And it was a really fun song, but it was just like, we don't need to, you know, it was like a moment that's like, it's not worth exploding for 3 minutes into a song. It's a fun moment for about 15 seconds of dialogue. Like, so that was that. So there's a few things like that. And the song still exists somewhere. I could pull them out at some point. But yeah, but I think that's pretty representative of developing new musicals, you know, just again, because there's so many different elements you're trying to get right. And there are so many, I think it's also that thing of like, when you start a new musical, especially something that's original, that's not based on like a novel or a film or something like that, you can kind of do anything, which is amazing and freeing and super exciting. But that also, because you can do anything, you're also like, well, what's the best thing? Or how, you know, there's so many different ways to kind of crack an egg. Is that the phrase? I don't know. There's so many different ways to go about it. With something like that. So it means just trying a ton of stuff out and seeing what works. And that's the only way to kind of do it. But luckily, Christian and Carissa, my co-authors on the project, are both amazing artists, but also incredible, you know, incredible artists for like new work. And, you know, we really found ways to support each other and get into a space where we would just try something out. And even if it totally sucked and totally failed, that's just part of the process. And then it goes, you know, it goes in the trash can and you try something else. Or you like, you don't put it all in the trash can, you put half of it in there and figure something out. So yeah, it was just really like a lot of that over a period of years that it came together.
But that's incredible. And where is the show now? Are you
Well, right now, I can't tell you any specific details because we don't know what's going to... There's a couple of theatres that we're potentially talking to. We've done 3 full productions now. So yeah, like 3 kind of... they've been slightly different lengths, but typically like 3 or 4 weeks or five weeks, I think we did in Arizona. But yeah, so there's a couple of things we're kind of sounding out, but there's nothing official I can share with you yet. But yeah, that's where we're at with it.
Love it. Love it. So what, like, seeing your whole journey in the industry at a high level, how would you summarize it, right? How would you summarize your journey in this industry?
Yeah, sure. That's a really good question. I mean, I think, you know, I've been doing this 10, 11, 12 years now. And the kind of crazy thing, it's kind of like, what's that phrase? Like hindsight is 2020. It's kind of a bit like that, that when you look back, you can kind of see the pieces coming together. When you're living it, it's really hard to connect things like that. But it really just has been a kind of like step by step. This thing led to this thing, led to this thing, led to this thing, in a kind of really, really small way. Because yeah, one of the things that led to, you know, my HO boyfriend, I made this decision and I was lucky that I could, you know, move to New York to do this program, the BMI program, which is how I met Christian, which, you know, is how all of that happened. So yeah, it really just is. I think that's one of the hardest things when you're starting out, is you feel like you have to do something big, you know, you feel like you have to like turn up at some like Broadway producer's house and be like, I've written the best new musical you'll ever see. And like, they're like, yeah, you and like 100 other people. But like, you know, so that's not how this thing works. And again, you know, we keep talking about Broadway, I keep talking about Broadway and West End. There are obviously 2 types of theatre that, you know, are particularly get a lot of visibility, but they're certainly not, you know, the only types of theatre. But yeah, it really is. It's kind of like, or I say sometimes with the songwriters I work with, it's really like looking, you know, you can only see so far ahead, but like that, your kind of next challenge is right in front of you, is one way you can say it, that it's like, what, you know, what can you do to take a kind of step forward, you know? Because I think a lot of us are focused on where we want to end up, you know, and part of it is in this world of theatre, you know, we don't get that much say in where that happens. There's so much luck and things coming together at the right time and mostly not coming together at the right time. There's a lot of waiting around and waiting for things to happen. But yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, being where I am, is you just see that it is just like, you know, even small things that help you move forward are the things that lead to the next thing, you know. And I think pretty much everyone's trajectory as an artist is kind of like that. And luckily, not all of the time, but most of the time when you do things, it tends to lead to other things. And that's kind of what, you know, what you do. And if you do that long enough, fingers crossed, it kind of, you know, it works out to some level of stability. Though, you know, even being 10, 11, 12 years in this, there's not anywhere near as much stability as I thought there might be. That makes sense. You know, that there's that, like the joke You know, even big Broadway Western stars sometimes finish a show and they're like, I don't think I'll ever work again. I don't know if I'll ever work again. Because you don't know, you know, you don't know. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it, how this kind of panned out.
I love it. And you basically just gave a piece of advice, but I want to re-ask you. What would be a piece of advice you would give to someone starting in this industry or that is currently like stuck in any artistic process or just wants to be part of our industry?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the biggest thing, I know I sort of touched on this, and it really is as simple and as complicated as just get started. Do something, do anything. I know that sounds really easy to say, but it really just is like, again, you know, even just writing a show, even if it never gets put on, even if you just write it for yourself and it's just in your bedroom, or you know, you write it with friends and it's just, it exists on a hard drive or it exists on, you know, manuscript paper or whatever, that is a huge achievement because there's just so much work involved. But you have to start somewhere. As I said, like, it takes years usually to write a show. You really have to start somewhere. And I think it's the same with the creative side of it. To finish a show, you really just have to start. You just have to decide that this is a thing you're going to focus on for a while, or you know, like, kind of like We Do the My Job Boyfriend, dip your feet in the, you know, in the pool a little bit, try it out, write a couple songs, write you know, like a treatment, a summary, sometimes people do, or with a play, they'll write a scene just to kind of play around, try it out. And that's how you get that done. But equally, in terms of like getting stuff produced, and it is really hard, and there's, you know, there are loads of people who are trying to get their, you know, their work on, and there aren't that many theaters, and there's always like, there's nowhere near enough money, you know, to get, it's a whole thing for like getting people, you know, and again, that's true for even writers who are pretty well established. Opportunities to stage stuff are really rare and really hard to find. But the way I think you kind of start moving forward, that is just to go with whatever opportunities are right in front of you. You know, if you just, even if it's just, you know, you have four or five actor friends and you just want to be like, hey, you guys, do you want to come round? I've like written this thing. Why don't we just kind of like, no frills, just sing through this thing or chat through this thing, or just whatever it is. Or, you know, you get an opportunity to put something on just in any space, you know, a black box space without even that much in there, just to get something moving, to get the ball rolling. Because I think, you know, I think even now a lot of us have this fantasy again that we'll come up with this idea in our heads and we'll like, you know, we'll end up at like dinner sat next to some, you know, amazing like producer with all this money, and they'll be like, oh my God, this is the perfect thing. You know, have unlimited money, have unlimited resources, we're going to make this a thing. And that doesn't happen for anyone. You know, that's not whatever it is. So again, it's just like, what can you do to be putting stuff out there? And it's really hard. I don't want to kind of undermine like that. It is, creating stuff is really hard. Finding like paths to get stuff produced. And I think at the moment as well, like with the, you know, I know the pandemic is done, but like the world economy is a mess and everything is super expensive and whatever. So I think people are stressing out even more than usual. At least I know in New York and London, at least people are like, oh, like, how are we ever going to get through this? We will. But yeah, it is just, you know, going where there is a path, and kind of like, I think as a creative artist, you kind of get used to the like default answer being no, but you keep trying anyway. Like, you know, that saying that like you get not even 100 rejections to one yes, you know, it's probably like 1,000 or something, but you just keep trying, you know, wherever you can. And that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of it. And it's also, you know, it's also true, you know, because I told you I do, you know, I do a lot of education work, but as a, just becoming a good writer is how you do it. You write bad things, you know, bad but promising things is how you start, you know. And I have those songs, again, I wouldn't show them anyone because I'm a bit embarrassed, but you know, even from sort of 15, 20 years ago, some of the music I was writing when I was doing my master's degree or something like that, obviously you get better and better, but you really have to push through that phase of being like, you know, this has promise in a way. It's not as good as I would like it to be, but you really have to push through that. Same with acting, same with singing, all these things. You just have to be kind of bad at something for a while and tolerate being bad at something to get what you're trying to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. We've all gone through that. Like,
right.
If, if I went back to what I wrote when I was in college, right now it would be like, maybe let's keep it in the drawer.
right. And that's all, you know, and that's all fine. But yeah, it just is. You just have to, like, there's this great phrase about songwriting, that songwriting can't be taught, but it can be learned, right? That, like, you know, and so in my education work as a songwriter, really, it's not like being, it's not even like being a guitar or singing teacher. It's like, you know, this is the technique, this is how you do it. It's really about giving people the kind of opportunities and kind of encouragement and feedback to really, like, teach themselves how to write songs. And it's the same. Yeah, it's the same with theater shows. Theater shows are really hard. You know, to write a good theater show is really hard. And there's so many things. There's like 17 dimensions to think about all at once. And yeah, so you just start by, you know, as you know, where you can, and after a while you get better and better. And you eventually get used to the fact that you are going to be a bit embarrassed by things you wrote, you know, or things even a year or two ago. What's that phrase? Yeah. Like, if you're not embarrassed by who you were 6 months ago, you're not growing fast enough, or something like that. That's not just a theater thing. You know, that's that. And you just learn. Yeah, you get better the more you do. You know, it's just like the gym, putting in reps or whatever. So yeah, the sooner you start putting in those reps, the sooner you start kind of like feeling things out, the kind of sooner things will progress. Is as simple and complicated as that.
Yes, absolutely. So last question.
Yeah.
What are your top five favorite musical theater shows?
Oh yeah, that's another good question. And I have to say, it changes all the time. I don't like picking, I'm glad you said five, because if you said one, I would really struggle. I wouldn't be able to give you a good answer on that at all. So yeah, it changes all the time. But what I was going to say is, let me think about the shows that right now seem to be in my brain, or I'm listening to quite a lot. So I was going to say, I was in New York a couple times this year. Which was really, really fun. And I did get to see, I know it's closing soon, but I did get to see Beetlejuice, which is one of my favorites right now. I think I really love Eddie Perfect, the guy who wrote, I think is Australian, but it definitely has a, like, British people are known for sometimes a kind of like sarcastic humor or like irreverent humor. And so it really ticks those boxes for me. So I had a really, really great time. Seen that. Oh, and I also saw in New York sometime this year, which is also closing, A Strange Loop, which I just thought was so, so brilliant. It's quite niche. Some of you guys might know listening. It's a musical about a Black queer writer and about, you know, all of the baggage that comes with that. And so it's, you know, and it's great that something like that could be made, you know, and could be put on at that level. But in itself, it's an amazing piece of theater. And it's one of those shows that I think even since the first time I heard it, I can't stop thinking about it and the messages it sets. So I really enjoyed that. Randomly, when I'm on the subway, on the bus or the train at the moment, I'm listening a lot to Dreamgirls. I don't know what that's about, but I'm enjoying that. It's kind of making me, it's really cold in London right now. So that seems to be bringing me some like sunshine and warmth. So I am enjoying that. The other show I was going to say, so obviously we had the pandemic. I'm sure you guys know that. But yeah, one of the first shows I saw after the pandemic was actually, I was in Barcelona. I got to see a production of Fame there. I think they called it Fame. I don't know if they called it Fama. And so, yeah, we were talking about it earlier. I speak pretty good Spanish. I'm not fluent. I speak pretty well. And I know the show Fame super well. It's one of the shows I really fell in love with as a kid. And so, yeah, it was really amazing. We'd actually done our production of Maestro Boyfriend at Arizona Theatre Company just before. And one of the great things about writing a one-woman show, obviously we had no idea this was coming, but when there was the pandemic, obviously having one actress and one pianist on the stage, you know, it made it a lot easier. It was one of the reasons I think Arizona Theatre Company wanted to kind of reopen after the pandemic with our show. So there I was in Barcelona. I was just visiting for 10 days. Didn't even know the show was on. Saw it was on, saw it advertised on a bus or something. I was like, oh my God, I have to go and see that. And it was just like it was so amazing just to see like more than two people on the stage for the first time in a couple of years. But it also is such a great score and such a great show in general. And then finally, I was going to say a show that I kind of went back to a lot during the pandemic which some of you guys may know of, you may not. There's a TV musical, it's a TV series, actually, a musical TV series called Galavan. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's by, so this is the thing. It's not as well known as it probably should be. So the music is by Alan Menken, the Disney writer. Yeah. With lyrics by Glenn Slater, who did the lyrics for the Little Mermaid version on stage, and Tangled, Enchanted, I think. And Sister Act, so worked with Alan Menken a ton of times. Yeah, and it's really fascinating. It's kind of like a medieval England setting. So it's kind of, would you call it a sitcom? I don't know. I think it's like 25-minute episodes, and so it's like kings and queens and servants and peasants and that whole world. But it's this like hilarious, irreverent comedy. It's kind of like Alan Menken writing like Monty Python style songs, kind of somewhere between like Monty Python and Disney. It's called Galavant. There's two seasons. The albums, I'm pretty sure they're on Spotify and Apple Music and all of that. There's just tons of hilarious songs. And in the second season, they have tons of guest artists, like Kylie Minogue is in it randomly. Matt Lucas is in it. Weird Al is in it. They obviously had the budget for the second season. But yeah, there's some really, really brilliant and hilarious and irreverent songwriting. So I think, was that five? I think that was five. But again, no particular order. There's way more. I could ask me tomorrow, I'd have a different list. But that is my five.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. It has been so pleasure. Fun having you.
My pleasure for having me.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, for letting me pick your brain about your work. And yeah, I cannot wait to see what's coming next for you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Martin.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.